Blog Talk Radio. Hello, Eastern Airline listeners. Welcome to our EAL Talk Radio Show, where we're coming to you live tonight from our studio in Jacksonville, Florida, and beautiful Ponte Vedra, Florida, home of Golf's TPC. It's been a gorgeous day here with lots of sunshine and temperatures reaching up to 77 degrees. So won't you join us tonight by calling area code 213-816-1611, and share your stories of adventures or even your misadventures with us. We'd love to hear from you. Again, that number is 213-816-1611. And tonight, the third caller will win our EAL mystery gift. Now, there's two ways to get to our broadcast. Our website is www.ealradioshow.com, where you'll find the player on the homepage, or at www.blogtalkradio.com /Captain Eddie, CaptainEddie, and that's with the player button. Now, archive shows can be played using the same address just given. Just remember that the last broadcast show is at the top of the list. Now, we have a smash of a show lined up for you tonight. As flight attendants have instructed passengers for years, ladies and gentlemen, please fasten your seatbelts, stow your luggage under your seat or in an overhead compartment, return all folding trays and seats back to the upright position, and make sure to turn your cell phones off. Oh, listen, can you hear the engine singing the Eastern Airlines music? This radio talk show plane is taxiing down the runway and ready for takeoff. Captain Neil, she's all yours. Take her up.
Thank you so much, Margaret. So nice having you folks with us this evening. We hope you enjoy our show. We've got so many things that we want to talk with you about tonight. Also, we hope to have our president of Eastern Airlines from 1963 to 1973, Mr. Floyd Hall, with us a little bit later on in our show. But for tonight, there are a couple of things that I want to kind of clear up that we had on our last show. First of all, we talked a little bit about the Wiley Post Memorial Marker beacon being on top of the George Washington Bridge. It's still there, folks, and that's the original marker beacon.
It is.
It's the original marker beacon that was installed in 1935, dedicated in 1935. And it's on the west side of the GW Bridge, and there are a couple of things that happened on the George Washington Bridge in 1960. It was used as a primary navigational tool, and on occasion, airplanes out of LaGuardia still use that beacon, and the FAA requires the beacon to be on at night. So that's just a little additional information we'd like to pass on to you. Oh, there are a couple of little tidbits of trivia about the GW Bridge. Most of us know the George Washington Bridge as the GW Bridge, but in the 1960s, they actually had a small plane that safely landed on the two center upper level roadways. Luckily for the plane, the median barrier wasn't added until 1970.
Imagine that was one heck of an approach.
It must have been. And also, a lot of folks don't realize, but the George Washington Bridge is the busiest bridge in the world. The busiest bridge in the world. It accompanies nearly 100 million vehicles each year. And in its first year of operation, it accommodated more than 5.5 million cars the first year. But
a lot
I think
of those were taxis.
Yeah, I think so. But I think last time we talked a little bit about the airway system.
Oh yes.
We talked a little bit about aircraft engines.
Yes.
A little bit about aircraft engines. A lot of folks don't realize that at one time we had combustion engines or piston engines on
the internal
airliners.
What a great invention.
Do you know what the theory of the internal combustion engine is, Bud?
Yes. Intake, compression, combustion, and exhaust. But, Captain Neil, what do our mechanics call it?
Well, we used to call it suck, squeeze, bang, and blow.
Hey, hey.
and still, the jet engines has the same principle because the air is pulled through the front of the engine, and then it's compressed, and then it's by squeezing it, and then it's ignited, and that's the combustion end, and then it's, of course, blown out the end through the turbines. So the same principle for the jet engine as the round engines or the piston engines.
Now, the piston engines, what were some of the piston engines you flew with?
Oh, with Eastern, I first started out on the Convair, so that would be the R2800,
wow,
which is probably historically the most, I think it's probably the most reliable engine that's ever been hung on an airplane.
That's pretty good.
And then moving over to the DC-7s and the Constellations, of course, they had the R3350 engines, which was, I believe, the three-banked engines. They had some of the Constellations. I believe the DC-7 also had the PRTs, the power recovery turbines.
Yeah.
And so these were our aircraft engines. Now, on the Electra, we had a propeller, but we had a turboprop or a turbine engine actually driving that propeller up front through a reduction gearbox, and that was the old Allison engine. So those were the propeller-driven airplane engines that I flew.
Yeah.
And then going on into the 727s, of course, we had the Pratt & Whitney's. And with the 1011, we had the Rolls-Royce engines and also the Rolls-Royce engines that I flew on the 757, which were very dependable engines.
Oh, they were great engines. I've got a little story to tell you about. The only radial I ever had the opportunity to fly was the R985. It was in a Beech 18. And one night, one of our pilots had a problem. He blew a jug, and rather than shutting the engine down, he flew it back, and it was something ironic to see. That engine was still running with a jug missing.
My goodness.
The pistons out there slapping, ruined the engine, but he got it back alive.
My golly.
And I had the experience like you did, but I'd had it in the military. It was ours with the Allison T56-10Ws.
Okay.
And they were the Navy's version of the Electra, the P3 Orion, the Alpha model, which was water assist takeoff.
Mm-hmm.
It was a rocket ship, so we ran out of water, and then it became a grand piano.
Well, we could go on all day long talking about aircraft engines, I believe. But, Margaret, I believe you've done a little bit of research on another department of folks that work for Eastern Airlines that actually they were the face of Eastern Airlines every time a passenger stepped on the airplane, and that person was called, of course, the flight attendant, mm-hmm, or in the old days,
stewardesses.
Sure.
Right.
Margaret, tell what you've found about our flight attendant group.
Well, interestingly enough, regarding the early days of flight attendant history, I'd like to just mention that there were two unsung heroes as far as most people are concerned. Ellen Church, I don't know if anyone in the audience remembers her or knows of her, but she was a native of Iowa, and she was the person who actually began the flight attending as we know it today. And she was also a licensed pilot and a registered nurse. And at that time, company executives and male pilots were dead set against the idea of hiring women. But she somehow managed to convince Steve Stimson, the manager of Boeing Air Transport in San Francisco, that trained female nurses would indeed be an asset as attendants. And since the early aircraft flew at lower altitudes, usually around 6,000 feet, and there was a lot of air turbulence, at that time a lot of passengers became ill. So that seemed to be a natural result of hiring a nurse.
And I believe there were 8 original stewardesses, if I'm correct on that, and they were registered nurses at that time. Now, another person that I think should be mentioned is Margie Boyle, and I'm sure some of you know her and remember her. And she was Eastern's most famous flight attendant, and she retired never missing a flight in over 44 years. And she actually began on Valentine's Day, February 14th, 1944, thinking a year as an attendant would be good finishing school for her. And she actually wound up working 11,000 flights.
That's
serving,
a lot of
that's amazing. Serving 1.2 million meals. I cannot imagine that. And flying 22 million miles. And this is the most outstanding, one of her outstanding features. She kept her original uniform size.
And also, she had a little saying there at the end. Can you read about that?
She did, and actually it says her first flights were in a 21-passenger DC-3s with non-pressurized cabins, and there was no air conditioning and often no heat. So one of her infamous sayings was this. She said, "I would give bald-headed men pillows so they wouldn't get their heads too cold."
That's good. That's good.
Very good. And there were so many famous movie stars that actually played roles of flight attendants, and we can talk about that a little bit later on. We have a caller on the line now. I believe we have Jim Hart down in West Palm Beach. Jim, are you still there? Are you still with us?
Yes. Yes, I am, Neil.
How are you tonight, Jim?
I'm fine, thanks, and sort of recovering from a wonderful chapter meeting we had yesterday. It was our 20th anniversary, and we had 25 Eastern Airlines people there. And the lady who started our chapter, Beverly Newland, brought with her all of the books that she had when she started telephoning and started the first meeting of our chapter. John DeRose, of course, the founder of EARA, came up from Miami and sat in and enjoyed the kickoff of a beautiful chapter. And Beverly was telling us that during the first few years, we had, I think it was 51 members in the chapter, and they would go sometimes to the races. They would go square dancing because perhaps you have heard the name Marjorie Merriweather Post. Post cereals. Well, she owned, of course, she built Mar-a-Lago, which is now owned by Donald Trump. And, of course, when Marjorie enjoyed the square dancing, some of our members used to go, not necessarily at Mar-a-Lago, but at other square dances held in the greater West Palm Beach area. And our meeting was just excellent. Our speaker was a probate judge from Delray Beach. He handles the southern part of Palm Beach County. And his talk was very interesting because so few people know about the intricacies of the probate process. So he was enlightening everyone. We had a nice question and answer session after that. We put him on first because he had some appointments, and his talk lasted for about 45 minutes. And while he was speaking, I ordered a seafood platter for him, which he did consume while we opened our business. We opened our business meeting, and you know, the first person I call on, of course, is our treasurer, because we want to know if we're still solvent. And Sue Dalbo is our treasurer, and she said, "Yeah, we're still solvent. We've got $300 in the bank, and plus we've got $250 on deposit with the Atlantis Country Club for our next Christmas luncheon." And of course, Beverly always handles the names and so on, and collecting the funds for the Christmas luncheon. Of course, we have another one of our members, Cindy Hooper, who is still a practicing nurse. And Cindy took care of our 50-50 drawing. We had $68 in the 50-50, and I suggested to the group that they consider giving two 50-50s because, hey, two $17 prizes for $34 would seem to appeal to everyone. Everyone agreed. And so we had two drawings. And Morris Ogrunsky won the first $17. And would you believe? I'm glad I didn't have anything to do with the drawing because I won the other $17. So. and of course that's gonna allow me to send some money on to you folks for the radio show. How's that?
Oh, great! So we appreciate it so much, Jim. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And one of the final things that happened during our meeting lasted about an hour and 45 minutes, I guess. And I was presented with a beautiful plaque, being, of course, the current president of the chapter. And I've been there for about 12 years. And everyone enjoys the fact that I have interesting speakers at every meeting. And I think that really is what allows us to get a good turnout at each meeting.
Yeah. Yeah, the program director usually is the most important person among the officers of whatever group is meeting. That program director has got a lot of responsibility of keeping it interesting to come back. And how many people do you usually have at your meetings?
Oh, between 25 and 30.
Okay. That's very good.
That's a good turnout, especially when you think about a number of our folks are getting along in years. In fact,
yeah. We
had to have a minute of silence after the pledge to the flag, because two of our members had just expired, Bob Knotts and Joe Crescia. But then again, we included in our moment of silence the fact that Dave Tompkins, do you remember Dave, who was a captain at one time?
Oh, and, sure, I remember Dave.
Well, you know, his wife Janet just passed away.
No, I hadn't heard that.
You might pass that along to anyone that knows Dave. I don't know what the circumstances were, but it was last week, and we sent a card to Dave, in fact, yesterday during the meeting.
Well, but, I'll get this information. I'll get that on over to Jim Holder with the Retired Eastern Pilots Association, because they usually publish information like that of the pilots and their wives, you know, and so I'm sure he would like to get that information.
Sure. His wife's name, of course, was Janet, and both Dave and Janet, for years, came up to our December Christmas party. And during the days of the credit union was usually present, and they would give us a few $50 gift certificates to give to our people. So we kind of miss that part of it, but everyone who attends our Christmas party comes away with a gift of some sort, which I think is nice.
Yeah, that's great. Well, Jim, thank you so much for calling tonight, and we will try to get in touch with Mr. Floyd Hall in just a few minutes. So if you'll continue to listen on, you might be able to hear Mr. Hall again. We're hoping that he's going to be available when we make the phone call to him.
I hope so, because Mr. Hall joined the Home Office in 63 at the same time I did, and in fact, when it came time to make adjustments on the Eastern logo and a bunch of other things, I believe it was Mr. Hall who hired a man by the name of Max Heisig. And, of course, I knew Mr. Hall's girl Friday, Barbara Daniels, and I'm sure he would appreciate hearing maybe just a hello from me, if that's possible.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, you try to call in when we get him on the line. If we do get him on the line, please try to call back, okay?
Okay, yes, and I won't be with you next Friday, Neil, because my wife and I are going to be on the high seas on a beautiful cruise to the Eastern Caribbean.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. I hope you have a smooth sail.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Thank you very much.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
And don't eat too much, don't drink too much.
Oh, heck, all right.
Have a good time.
Thank you.
Otherwise, have a good time. But
thank
okay,
you.
Okay, thanks a lot. And we'll go to Margaret. I think you have some information about
Well, actually, Neil, we're going to introduce trivia questions every show, so please listen for them. And tonight, the first person who calls in with the correct answer will also win an EAL Mystery Gift Prize. Now listen carefully, everyone. Here's the question. What was the Eastern Executive Building number on the corner of Lejeune Road and Northwest 36th Street in Miami? Now, we don't want the building. We want the number. So let's pick up those phones, dial in, and when you hear that, you know you've won. All right. Thanks, callers.
Thanks so much. I want to give a special commendation to Jim Holder with the Retired Eastern Pilots Association, who is the editor of their magazine, Repartee. Just got it in the mail, Jim, and if you're listening, or Jerry, you guys do such a great job. The magazine is a wonderful magazine, and most of it is dedicated to our last year's convention in Charleston, South Carolina. Wonderful pictures, wonderful stories, and the insert that I believe Jerry came up with, Jerry Frost, Captain Jerry Frost, has been working on compiling all of the pilots that ever flew with Eastern Airlines. And installed in this book was a handout or a dropout that is a book also, and I haven't counted the number. I think Jerry gave us at one time how many that he has actually identified with Eastern Airlines since the very beginning. And, of course, the very beginning started with Captain Gene Brown, number one, and Captain Dick Merrill, number two. So all through the years, he has been working on trying to find seniority lists so that he can compile this list. Jerry, you've done an outstanding job here. It really is great. So thank you very much for the magazine. And you guys do a great service for the Retired Eastern Pilots Association and the members that you guys take affiliates as well. So I think every issue of the EARA magazine, or newspaper rather, there is an application for anyone that wants to join the Retired Eastern Pilots Association as an affiliate member. And there's an application to do so. Believe me, the magazine is outstanding. I was the editor for about 5 years of that magazine, but when Jim Holder took it over, he's done such an outstanding job and really brought it up to a real art. Thank you guys for putting out such a fine publication.
And that insert is big. There's a lot of names in
there. There are a lot of names.
Amazing.
Actually, Neil, I'd just like to remind our callers of the phone number again. So that is area code 213-816-1611. And actually, Neil, I have a question for you. When did you retire from Eastern?
Well, my retirement date was 1989, February of 1989.
What happened to Eastern folks when the company ceased operations?
Well, Margaret, many jobs, got jobs with airlines, other airlines, and many started businesses of their own. And many, of course, like I wish I could have done, retired. Mm-hmm. I stayed in aviation a few more years and was a chief pilot for a small 135 airline out of Easton, Maryland, flying little airplanes, and then went as vice president and director of flight operations for Part 121 airline in Hawaii called Hawaii Air Pacific, and even helped start a new airline in 1992. It was a Part 121 carrier working out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And of course, now I'm doing what I did many years, even when I was flying for Eastern, and that is teaching real estate and mortgage courses. And I've always enjoyed that.
I'm curious to wonder how many people like us are retired and in real estate. That seems to be where a lot of pilots end up.
I think so, too.
And it's good.
And as a white-knuckle pretend flight attendant, I am also in real estate. I actually teach real estate along with Neil.
That's pretty good. Well.
And actually, maybe some of our callers would like to call in and tell us what they have been doing since they retired. We really love to hear your stories, and please pick up that phone and call us.
Yeah, give us a call, because I'm really curious to see,
know.
You know, what people did after their lives came to a screeching halt at the end of their airline career. For me, it was a big letdown because I loved it so much, and I'm, you know, nothing could compare. So call us. Give us a shout.
How long has it been now since you've worked for United, Bud?
I left in 2003. I retired early.
2003.
Yeah, for the family. And unfortunately, it didn't work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when we mentioned the building at the corner of Lejeune Road and 36th Street, I hope somebody will call and identify that building. If you ever work for Eastern Airlines, you certainly would know the number of that building. But just a quick review of 36th Street. If I can just think of coming out of the Travelers Motel, where I spent many many layovers and also training evenings at that motel, and unfortunately I couldn't spend much time around the pool or at the pool bar, like some of the guys did. I had to actually work at the books. In order to get through the ground school.
You know, that part of Miami, that side of the airport over there, what was it called? They had all those airplanes.
Oh, I think we call that Cockroach Corner.
Cockroach Corner.
I believe that's what it was. You're right.
You could see just about anything that flew.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
It was fun.
But coming out of the Travelers Motel, of course, walking right directly across the street, almost directly, was the James Hartley Building, which was our training building. And, of course, it was named after James Hartley, the co-pilot, along with Bob Wilbur, that were the flight crew in the DC-9 in Boston that was hijacked. You recall that?
Was that the one they were shot?
Right, exactly.
I was working on the ramp that night. For Allegheny, I was working a bag smasher, and I couldn't understand why this DC-9 went by us so fast. Because we didn't know it had been hijacked and pulled into the gate over there. It was amazing.
Bob did an outstanding job, and of course he was awarded the medal for his heroic efforts in landing the airplane with his arms wounded in the shootout in the cockpit.
Boy, he came around that corner. He was traveling. He was fast when he was heading for that gate, I'll tell you.
Yeah. We're putting in a call now to Mr. Floyd Hall.
It's Eve.
Mr. Hall. Hello, Mr. Hall.
Yes, sir.
Yes, this is Neil Holland. I spoke with you a couple of days ago. How are you tonight?
Fine. How are you, Captain?
I'm doing fine. Now, you're located up in Vermont, aren't you?
You're about halfway up. About 20 miles from the Connecticut River.
Okay. Beautiful area up there. It certainly is. And we were just so happy to have you with us this evening. And I've spoke to and told a lot of folks that we were going to try to get in touch with you tonight. And looks like it's working. We thought we might have some difficulty in making a connection with you. But here we are. And here you are. Now, you're having a birthday in April, aren't you?
April the 4th.
April the 4th.
You'll be 95 years old, I'm sorry to say.
95 years old. My golly, that's congratulations.
Great job.
That's wonderful. Do you have many folks that from Eastern Airlines that talk with you, that you keep up communications with?
No, the only Eastern people that I know or have any connection with, Charlie Simons, who lives in the same town I do, and Rick Rivenbark, who is a retired captain. You know Rick?
Oh, yes, sir. And I believe that you, didn't you have something to do of appointing Captain Rick, Captain Rivenbark, Rick is a good friend of mine. I can't even remember his last name now. But I believe you had something to do with having him start an airline down south, South America, somewhere like that.
In Africa. in Nairobi, Africa.
Okay, got the wrong continent, didn't I?
Yeah, well, I have had some affairs in African Airlines for a long time. Saudi Arabia and Ethiopia. And East African Airways wanted to start. And while I was over in Africa one time, this man came to me and asked if we could do the same management contract that we did for Saudi and for Ethiopia. And I told him we could. And so Rick took a small group of people and went over there. He was there almost 4 years, and I must say, he really made a profit every year, which is unusual anywhere. Mm. It was a good airline. Rick had a good time, he said.
That's good.
That's wonderful. Now, you also were responsible for so many things with Eastern. First of all, I have someone, I don't know if Jim Hart, are you still holding? Jim wants to say hello to you, Mr. Hall.
Okay. Hi, Jim.
Hi. It's good to talk to you. Remember the nickname Dutch?
Yeah. How do you know that?
Oh, Mr. Hall, I was working with Charlie Glover and the Interline sales. And that's at the time that George Gordon was still with us. And do I remember correctly that one of the persons you hired when we were going through an image change was Max Heisig? Is that right?
Well, that was, Max Heisig was back at TWA, my TWA days, a long time before I ever came to Eastern. Max.
Okay, well, he did. He was employed by Eastern, I know, for a while. But I had occasion also to work with Barbara Daniel on occasion.
Barbara was my secretary the last couple of years and a good friend. You know, she died some time ago.
No, I didn't. I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah,
she had
ovarian cancer. And
I'm sorry.
Cut off quickly. Too bad, too.
At one time, I know she asked me if there was a chance I could pave the way for her to go to Bermuda. And she had a lady friend that she wanted to take down there. And I did, and she had an absolutely wonderful time.
I'm glad to hear it. Glad to hear it. She's a great girl.
Yes.
And I thank you for whatever you did for her.
It's awfully nice to talk to you, Mr. Hall, because you did so much for the airline while you were with us. And I left the company in 1968, just before you intended to move the home office to Florida. And my wife didn't approve of Florida, so I ended up in New England where I was born.
Yeah, well, we never really moved to Florida. We moved a lot of our operations there, but the headquarters, the board meeting, all that stuff was still in the Rockefeller, in the Eastern Airlines building. We had a building in Rockefeller Center. We couldn't get up and walk away from it. So we never moved down there. We moved a lot of the activities down there because we were so split up.
Mr. Hall,
do you remember?
What?
Excuse I'm sorry, me, do you remember when we were contemplating absorbing Mackey? I was a fellow that you sent down there to take a tour and pictures of all of their facilities.
Yeah.
And I came back with a carousel full of pictures, and we showed them in the boardroom, and I think that may have been the beginning of the acquisition of Mackey.
Well, it certainly was. You know, Mackey made no sense running over there. We should have bought him earlier, which we did do, but Mackey is a good outfit, and they really did well for us. I hope you did, too. Hope they did well for you.
I think we were really only interested in the route network. Is that right?
Yes, sir. I knew Joe Mackey, knew him well. He was my instructor when I was at Kelly Field in the Army.
Well,
now,
Colonel, excuse me.
Go ahead, Jim.
Mr. Hall, we have in the Palm Beach chapter of EARA a man that you may know. He is also about 94, I think, right now. And goodness, his name escapes me this moment. But he flew for Mackey after he came back from World War II. Sam Burton is his name. Sam Burton. He has a son flying now for Northwest, and he has three daughters, each of whom were flight attendants at one point.
Isn't that great? You know, there's so many people I can't really. I would be remiss if I told you I knew who it was. I can't recall the face. But I hear the name. I do know the name. I can't recall the face. That isn't unusual. It's a little old, that's all.
Mr. Hall, I believe, Mr. Hall, we were talking about Auburn University, and I believe you said that all of the material of Captain Eddie Rickenbacker's you gave over to Auburn University. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. That's correct. Auburn has a, I'm trying to say, a whole section of aviation, particularly around Eddie Rickenbacker. I gave them my files also, so they have my files and Eddie Rickenbacker's files. And I don't know what that means other than that we're glad to have them. They are glad to have them. I don't remember how many boxes and crates and things when I retired I brought up here. And so I shipped them down to Auburn, and they put some order to them.
Well, I can tell you that it's amazing what you can find and discover on the Internet. I went to Auburn University, and I started looking up for historical information about Captain Rickenbacker. And lo and behold, every piece of information that Auburn has about Eastern Airlines is on the Internet. And it tells you what every box contains that they have stored, and I looked up in one box because your name was on it. And I looked in there, and sure enough, there were several pictures of you and Captain Eddie at several functions. So it's amazing that right now, anyone that wants to go to Auburn and research Eastern Airlines, they can do so.
Yes, well, they certainly can. When Captain Eddie... When Captain Eddie died, we had to do something with his files and things. You know, he was a very famous man. And so Auburn wanted them, and we gave them to Auburn and shipped them to them. And then when I retired, they did the same thing for me. So they're all there. I never have been to Auburn, so I don't know. But I was working with a professor at Auburn. We used to go up here and talk to me about Captain Eddie quite a bit.
You also indicated to me that you were the first passenger, I believe, with TWA. When you were at TWA, there was an airplane that had just been put into service, and you were the first passenger on that flight?
In 1929, the first transcontinental airline in America was formed, called TAT, Transcontinental Transport. And my brother was a pilot on the westbound flight from Columbus, Ohio, to Winoco, Oklahoma. And my family and I drove over there to see him arrive. And the next morning, they had to take that airplane back to Columbus, Ohio, and it was empty. So my brother just took his own authority. My father and my brother and me all were passengers on the first eastbound flight out of Winoco, Oklahoma. That was July 9th, I think it was, 1929.
My goodness, my golly.
I was around TWA, I guess, quite closely for the rest of my life until I came to Eastern.
Now, you flew with TWA also. You were a captain with TWA?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I was for... I was a captain from 1940 until I went to Eastern. I guess it was 25 years or so.
My goodness. Well, you did so many things for Eastern, and we thank you very much for it. And we wish you a very happy birthday. And when I think of Walt Disney, I believe you brought in the airline to Walt Disney World. Also,
yeah.
There's so many firsts for you.
We did. And Walt, we had you. I'm sure you know this. We had a exhibit there.
Yes, sir.
And I don't know how long it ran. Of course, I had something to do with getting in there, but I wasn't around it very much because it was more of a publicity and sales organization. We had a lot of things. You know, I don't think most people don't know it, but because we helped start Walt Disney, we had first crack at every passenger going out of there. If they wanted to go out of there, they had to call Eastern to get a flight. We had a monopoly on them. We never did try to do that, you know, but it was fun.
Uh-huh. We do have another caller on the line, but I don't think he has punched the microphone to speak yet. But I think there's someone holding to talk with you as well. But it's so nice having you with us this evening. And how's the weather up there in Vermont?
Yeah, it's very good. We've had a lot of snow. I guess we've had about 4 days now where temperature's above freezing, first time this year. But we've still got 15, 18 inches of snow up here, and that's normal though for us. And we get along with it pretty good, especially if you don't have to go out. You know, I can't go anywhere because I can't walk anymore. When I left Eastern, I was having a problem, and I didn't know what the problem was. They still don't know what the problem was. But eventually, got so I couldn't walk at all. I can't walk now. I'm in a wheelchair all the time.
Well, I just have an email here that has come up on my screen, and Alexa Hall is listening to our broadcast this evening, and she wishes you well and says hello. And she can't talk to you because she's lost her voice. It sounds like to me she may have a cold. I believe I talked to Alexa about a week ago, and I think she she just indicated she's got pneumonia. But she remembers you well, Alexa Hall. She was a flight attendant for us. And do you recall, Alexa?
I had pretty good contacts with her by email for a long while. I still have her email address on my email address book. Say hello for me, would you?
That's Alexa Conway. I said Alexa Hall, but it's Alexa Conway. And
Alexa
I certainly
Conway.
Will. Well, she can hear you, so I'm sure she's got a smile on her face now when she's talked with you. So thank you so much for calling in, Alexa, and I'm sorry you couldn't speak with Mr. Hall, but maybe we can get you on again sometime around your birthday.
Is she okay physically?
She says she's got pneumonia right now.
Well, last time I heard her, she had back trouble, I think.
Yes, I think she still has that from what she's telling me, but I believe she's getting ready for a move. I'm not certain. I believe she's thinking about leaving the state of Washington and coming over to Idaho or another western state and taking up residence.
She's a nice girl. Nice woman.
Yes, she is.
She's not a girl anymore.
If while we have her on the air, Margaret just gave me a note, Alexa. If you can remember what the executive building on the corner of 36th Street and Lejeune Road was called, the number it was called, and I know Mr. Hall knows what building number it was, but we're trying to, Mr. Hall, we have a little contest that anyone that remembers the building number, we've got a little prize for them. So
on what? Where was this, what number? What street number?
It was the corner of Northwest 36th Street and Lejeune Road, the executive building. Do you recall? Do you recall the building number?
No, I don't really recall that location. 36th Street This is New York?
No, this is down in Miami. They built the executive building right there on the eastern property at the corner.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We built one there.
That's
correct. We built that. That's the corner of the main corner of the airport.
Yes.
And our executive building went up in an official building for an office building for the computer system. Had a building there, too. We built some training buildings. We built several buildings there. And I don't know if you know it, but the building was dedicated to Eddie Rickenbacker. We put a fountain out there with his picture on it, and he came down and dedicated it for us. He didn't want to do it, but he did. And the fountain, I guess that building's gone now.
I believe also at one time they had a time capsule that was at the corner of one of the buildings there. I'm not sure which one it was.
And in that building.
Yeah.
And when that, I think that time capsule, I can't tell you who had it, but they got it. And they put it in a Rickenbacker, a causeway, you know, out on the island.
Right.
They put capsule in there. I think it's sealed up in a granite building, a granite marker that says Captain Eddie Rickenbacker on it and said this is Rickenbacker Causeway. I can't think who did it. He was a great friend of Captain Eddie's. I think he was a flight engineer or something like that. But he wanted to do it, and we tried to help him. He needed to raise some money, and we did that.
Wonderful. Well, you've got a great memory. I could just barely remember that there was a time capsule. Didn't know exactly where it was located, but it was in that building that we're
that time capsule was for Eddie's benefit. It was his. I don't know whether history or what, but it was something about him and his military years and his airline, when the airline started, that sort of thing. And they wanted to put that fountain out there, but we couldn't get anybody to finance that, and we couldn't do that. It was too much. But we did help them put that capital.
Okay, very good. Well, we have another caller that wants to talk with you. Caller,
all right.
You there?
Yep.
Good evening, Neil. This is Tim Nunn. How are you?
Hello, Tim. Right now we have the president of Eastern Airlines on the radio with us. His name is Mr. Floyd Hall. I don't know if you remember Mr. Hall, because I think most of your time was in Atlanta with Delta Airlines.
Well, but I do remember the name, and I first remember Eddie Rickenbacker, and what a team. In fact, his memory is so sharp. That's incredible, I think. glad to hear from you.
Thank you. That's very kind of you to say that. But I wish it were very good. It isn't very good anymore. Afraid of getting a little old.
How young are you?
Mr. Hall, I want to tell you that you've always reminded me. You're a very distinguished-looking gentleman, kind of like the Douglas Fairbanks, you know, of the movies. Especially, I think you always had a mustache. Do you still have your mustache?
I sure do.
That's a very personal question, but...
It's very gray now.
It's very gray. Well, I think you could have gone into entertainment because you were a very handsome man, and you always reminded me of, let's see, there were a couple of people. Even Walt Disney had a similarity. You had a look like that, and also Walter Cronkite. I always thought that there was a little bit of resemblance there. But
I had more people tell me about Walter Cronkite than they did Mr. Disney.
Mr. Disney, yes. Yeah.
I consider both of them to be compliments. I wish I didn't like either one of them.
Well, we sure thank you for joining us this evening. We're about to, do we have one more caller? No. But we will see if we can get you back on the line and wish you a happy birthday around April, Mr. Hall, if that's okay with you.
I'm available anytime you guys want to. You know, Eastern Airlines was one of the happiest times of my life. And it was so because of the people of Eastern. We just had a wonderful outfit out there. And I just never will forget them. So anytime you want anything, I'll do what I can to help you.
Well, thank you so much. And you are a very admired, respected man, and a gentleman that really put the name of Eastern Airlines right up there above all of the others. And we have a great family. We really do. And
yeah,
people like yourself have made it that way. But thank you very much, and we wish you good night tonight, and thank you again for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Okay. I believe, is Alexa still on the air? Alexa
Conway.
Conway. Okay, she's in chat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're still trying to find out the building 16, and if anyone knows that building number. Margaret, I think you've got an email that has been sent to us that we need to read from one of our friends over in Lake City.
Yes, actually this is from Harry Watkins, and he said, "Hi, Neil. You mentioned that you'd like some remembrances of Eastern, so here goes. When working on the 4 p.m. to the 12:30 a.m. shift in Atlanta reservations one evening, June Hatton got an Army kid calling from the Greyhound bus station. He'd gotten a ride from Columbus, Georgia, Fort Benning to Atlanta, and was trying to get a bus to Indianapolis to surprise his mom for Mother's Day. He found out that the bus time travel would put him there too late. Fortunately for him, he happened to get June, and she listened to his story. He asked about flying on military standby, but she found out he didn't have enough money. June told him to wait outside the bus station, and we would be there about 12:40 after we got off work in about 30 minutes. I went with June and a couple more people to pick up the kid. I'm sure he wondered what he was getting into, but he trusted us. June drove to the airport. We went inside. She paid the difference so he could get on the night coach about 3:15 a.m. to Indianapolis, and we stayed till he left. The flight was almost empty, so of course he was boarded and got home in time for Mother's Day. He had gotten June's address to reimburse her for the part of the fare she paid. Later she got a letter from the mother thanking her. June was such a wonderful, outgoing person, and if you called Eastern with a problem, it became her problem. June was such an asset to Eastern and always in a good mood. After Eastern shut down, she went with Alitalia and was a regional marketing manager, I believe. Unfortunately, June passed away about 5 or 6 years ago. She has a sister, Sandy, who also worked for Eastern and still lives in Atlanta, and we're in touch by email and phone. I will always have fond memories of June and our time working together. It was never a dull moment with her around." And so thank you, Mr. Watkins. That was a very nice email in memory of June Hatton.
Very, very, very good. I'd like to throw something out for our listeners to consider. Anyone that has been in Greensboro, North Carolina, working in the operations or in the freight or ground services, there was a dog there that was a very famous dog that everyone knew as Wonder Dog. Wonder Dog. And when the crews would fly in, our Wonder Dog would know which flights the best meals, so that Wonder Dog would wander up to the airplane and be at the bottom of the stairs waiting for the filet mignon or whatever other meat was served that day. And the flight attendants would always have a great meal for Wonder Dog. And I believe Wonder Dog was actually an old stray dog that just strayed up to the operations there, and it was adopted. So anyone with some information about Wonder Dog, we'd like to have it. And if you would send it to us, just send it to host@EALRadioshow.com. That's host@EALRadioshow.com. I believe we have another caller on the air. Caller, can you tell us your name, where you're from?
Neil, this is Jan Butchka-E calling from Delray Beach, Florida.
Hi, Jan.
Hi, nice to, your program was just outstanding this evening, and it was so wonderful to hear Floyd Hall. He was the Madison Ave guy of Eastern Airlines, as I recall it. I did work at 10 Rockefeller Plaza, and the building that you were looking for, the number, is Building 16 in Miami. It was flanked by Building 11, which was the IT building, and Building 5, which was the accounting building. And that's how they numbered them for some reason, 5, 11, and 16. And it was
guess
in the
what?
Middle.
We do have a gift for you, Jan, and we'd like to have you email us with your name and where we can send this gift, because Building 16 is the correct answer. And I think most everyone, when you went down for any kind of pay problems or insurance problems or whatever, you went to Building 16. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And, Jan, what did you do with Eastern? What was your department?
I started with Eastern in Hartford, Connecticut, in reservations. After that, I went to the airport. I was actually the first woman working full-time at the Bradley Field in Windsor Locks. In fact, you may have flown in there while I was there.
I did.
Subsequently, I was at the city ticket office at the Statler Hilton Hotel, and then I went to 10 Rockefeller Plaza, and I was one of those that was moved to Miami following that in consumer affairs. When the company closed, I was in system baggage tracing and claims as one of the managers in that facility, and that was off-site.
Now, when did you retire?
I worked until the end.
Okay, the very end.
January
okay.
of 1991.
Okay. And if you would, again, remember to send us your name and your address so we can send this little gift to you. Just send it to host us, email it to us at host@EALradioshow.com, and we'll get it right out to you. I think you'll enjoy it.
Okay, I will do that.
And by the way, Alexa says hello. Alexa can't talk to us tonight because she has a very bad cold. She's lost her voice, and she has pneumonia. It's more than a cold. It's pneumonia.
Goodness.
But you do know Alexa Conway.
Yes, I do.
Well, very good. Well, thank you so much for calling us this evening, and we hope you'll call in again and listen to us again. And
well, thank you, and say hi to Alexa for me, please.
I sure will. Thank you so much. And good night.
Good night.
Folks, just a couple of things before we go off the air that I want to tell you about our website. A couple of new features, and one is the feature for the Hall of Fame. Of course, we have a page now that we're starting an Eastern Airlines Hall of Fame, and folks like Eddie Rickenbacker and also other people that made Eastern Airlines the airlines that it was and still remembered. But we do have that page. We have a contributors page. We have the new page for, I'm trying to think of all the pages that we have, Eastern History. And if you haven't read on the Eastern History page, the Art Birchcott diary, it is so very, very interesting. And so if you'll go there and start your reading, you'll find a lot of good information there. So we want you to use the website. We have a couple more features that we're adding that it'll be more interactive for you. And we've enjoyed tonight's show. And Margaret and Bud?
Yes, we have. It's been quite the experience.
It's been a great show. Thank all of you for tuning in to our live radio show. And we hope to see you or hear from you again next week as well.
And until then, we all say
good night, folks.